Chapter 8. Measure Your Chains. The ballot is stronger than the bullet, attributed to Abraham Lincoln, who votes for the policies that are proposed at the UN, who voted for the people that voted to accept them. Many countries are not democratic, so why should people in representative democracies feel bound by decisions influenced by dictators and autocrats? In the same vein, who voted for the policies which the WHO wishes to impose upon us? Again, autocrats and dictators influence the choice, but the people are not consulted. There is no legitimacy, no matter that the lawyers say, where is the consent of the governed? The hybrid offers us a path out of this mess, this matrix designed by the scene setters munching fancy food in fancy places. Well, I fancy a different dish, and I can say that when I set out to do something, I am a hard man to stop. This is the greatest task and challenge I have left to face, and I will give it my all. I hope that you will join me and enjoy the ride as well. As with all institutions, mission creep leads to more and more bull being produced, with globalist organizations handing down visions from on high to the willing and well-padded EU trough feeders, to our nation's expense fiddlers, and compliant institutions all over the shop. Climate change, safety and public health, and national security are the levers for exerting control. After all, who would argue against securing life and limb? They then churn out regulations that we are supposed to swallow, particularly in an elite-defined emergency, no matter how contrived or pseudo-scientifically justified. In the end, globalization is really about penetration and subjugation, taking over markets and sucking the marrow out of nations for the benefit of the banksters, the controllers of most of the 30 corporations that dominate the global market. A bunch of technocrats showed their true colors back in 1991, when the Club of Rome manipulators wrote The First Global Revolution, in which these interfering and dangerous psychobabblers stated, "In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. All these dangers are caused by human intervention, the real enemy that is humanity itself." Booker, 2018, p. 15. Nearly 20 years before this plot was hatched, the same bunch had sold 37 million copies of The Limits to Growth, in which they had used computer predictions to show that population growth would soon outrun food production. Booker, 2018, p. 16. Here we are, almost 5 decades later, with their mumbo-jumbo predictions in tatters. But who else liked those inaccurate computer prediction thingies? More dangerous nerds looking at climate and COVID. Hockey stick graphs and bonking professors spring to mind. Let's see what Professor Frederick Seitz had to say about the counter-narrative conclusions that were deleted in the August pseudo-scientific report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Changes, IPCC, second assessment back in 1995. In my more than 60 years as a member of the American scientific community, including service as president of both the National Academy of Sciences and the American Physical Society, I have never witnessed a more disturbing corruption of the peer review process than the events which led up to this IPCC report. Booker, 2018, p. 18. What would a president of the National Academy of Sciences know, eh? What a chump, expecting reason when the bit is between the teeth of the latest bunch of the end-of-the-worlders, an old-school type who thought ethics were important. Many of the new type can't even spell the word. In the hit docudrama An Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore had told us that islands would be disappearing under rising seas, but satellite observations showed that sea levels at Tuvalu and other supposedly threatened Pacific islands, far from rising, had actually been falling. Booker, 2018, p. 31. Nerdy, politically slanted garbage in gives us expensive garbage out and will continue to do so. You may recall that it was a Randy UK professor's dire morbidity computer forecasts that gave our scare the hell out of them, like the Chinese politicians, the excuse to lock us all down, surf-like. His back-of-an-envelope projections didn't add up, and Professor Pansdam ignored his own advice when his urges took hold. Ethics, integrity, decency, all things once expected of public figures have been canned, along with our liberties. Law Professor President Barack Obama told us that the climate science was settled. But whose word do you take for it, his or that of Seitz? And when the facts change, aren't we supposed to change our minds, as Keynes suggested? Apparently not, but I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy, so I do. Hence, despite my natural antipathy to many of their theories, I am quoting from a good number of lefty academics because they have produced good, credible work worth some time and consideration. The administrative state has in many cases grown to be more powerful than our legislative one, with our representatives palming off to admin wonks the work of fashioning tight and effective laws and regulations. And those laws now often benefit someone specifically, not the people, thus not something that voters would accept if given the chance to have their say. This surrender of the duties of MPs, congressional representatives, and other legislators is one of the great deceptions of our time. Who told them to stop working as they should by subcontracting out the writing of laws to activist civil servants? If they can't be bothered, why should we vote for the numpties? This is one of the main reasons that the people need the veto to put things back on track and to ensure that it never happens again. They can't complain. They enjoyed the gravy train for decades, no centuries, messed things up royally, and are now being held to account. If we don't do it, who will? The press? They are the lapdogs, the poodles of the powerful, nudging and lying so long as the money flows in and they get to keep their lying little jobs. This is why the press is not trusted. Unfortunately for them, many are now being laid off, and good luck with finding a real job where honesty and judgment are required. Were the people in democracies asked to be bound by these technocrats and their policies? Were these systems set in place because they would not have to consult the people to get a decision? I believe this is exactly what they are designed to do. So isn't it time the system was changed to ensure oversight of this undemocratic, highly paid international lawyer-crafted system that has put the world into a tailspin? Hitler had lawyers to justify his actions, as did Stalin for his show trials. So don't fool yourself that the international legal crew is all sweetness and light. Many are as partisan and gutless as the political class. As one barrister friend said to me, show me a human rights lawyer and I'll show you a fee-chasing immigration specialist. And here's what the Lebanese-American historian Philip K. Hitti had to say about immigration in his 1970 classic, History of the Arabs. For immigration and colonization are, as has been well said, an attenuated form of invasion. Hitti, 1970, PS 12. I mentioned in the earlier chapter, Leaders and Led, that Raphael Lemkin's efforts inspired the Genocide Convention, and in his version, he included protection for cultures. This protection was taken out of the UN's version, and I have a more than sneaking suspicion that this was done to put another nail in the coffin of national identity. Bilski, Leora, Klagsbrunn, Rachel, 2018. America, the UK, and Europe are having their cultures re-engineered by open borders, and this is being done consciously by the international elite. It is our individual duty to band together and assert our rights to see an end to this madness. Take heart, we have it in us to kick the bums out instead of kicking the can further down the road. Your vote is the golden ticket, but you need the people's veto to use it effectively. Until then, you have as much chance of being happy with politics and politicians as MPs are with their inflation-proof salaries, expenses, and pensions. I might mention again that the Swiss MPs don't get a salary, just a daily allowance for their 12 weeks of work per year, and have minimal expense-guzzling gizzards from that nation's fortunate owners and defenders. Why did I and many others work for decades to get the UK out from under the unelected EU commissioners, the real rulers? Because our predecessors fought and died for our right to live under our own laws, moulded by representatives on our behalf. But our representatives betrayed us, accepting a system of overlordship, putting us under an overmighty group of unelected technocrats and former national politicians, now globalist shills. Note, it took the people to get us out, not the padded parliamentarians. They fought tooth and nail to toe the party's lines and to stiff the voters, dragging their heels for years. Only after decades of hard democratic slogging, of being belittled, demeaned, and laughed at, did we UKIPers eventually manage to achieve what we did. But we should not have to do this every time our representatives betray the legacy of those who had to punch holes in enemy lines and grind through the mud and the blood to get to the green fields beyond. We should not be put through such a punishing regime for so long just to be heard once. The hybrid solution is the way forward, honouring the heroes who got us so close, leaving us the privilege of making the final push for freedom, bracing ourselves for that last assault on the bastions of power, the people's veto in our hands, ready to plant atop the highest ramparts, ours at last. Over many centuries, our dynastic and democratic rulers led us into money-making or status-serving wars. Between 1914 and 1918, almost 5% of all British males died in a war in which 40% of our combatants did not even have the vote, and it was only after their bloody sacrifice that the survivors were awarded the damned thing. The old system died of self-inflicted wounds born of arrogance and stupidity, out of which emerged our still heavily flawed, corruption-prone, but slightly more representative system. However, the murderous left had been let loose in Russia and took a horrendous toll with the help of Wall Street. Oh yes, where do you think the money and expertise for their rapid industrialization came from? Go read a little about Trotsky in New York and his passage to Russia in 1917 and the Vickers trials in Russia. You can start with the books of the Soviet-era industrial expert Anthony C. Sutton. So for decades, the world was led down many rabbit holes and blind alleys, distracted by the war between left and right, rather than right and wrong, keeping hidden the already smooth-running, peaceful Swiss system in which the people rule, whilst the cancerous representative system was kept in place elsewhere to allow them to rule and for us to serve. The motto at Sandhurst was, "Serve to lead. It makes me want to puke now." Serving who? Now our storied system is wilting, torn apart by the gorging and gouging of the greedy types who once more seek to rule ever more tightly over us, sicking upon us their appointed apparatchiks, cronies, and clerics. Today they are using another three-letter acronym, ESG, Environmental, Social, and Governance, to hide their intent, as Lenin perfected and Orwell explained in his slim volume on the use of English. The handlers in the elite are not just the banksters in the West who mishandled the end of the USSR, but include the CCP's corrupt party leaders, their favoured families, minions, and Western cronies, all of whom are guilty. Left and right mean nothing, money does all the talking for them. Do you think our corrupt city slickers promoted direct democracy as the way forward for the former Soviet states? No, they left them at the mercy of corrupt ex-party officials and the like in Russia, Central Asia, and Eastern Europe. So they merrily embezzled away, with many communists simply changing their ties and getting on famously with their EU brother bureaucrats. They probably had an interesting time comparing notes. Where were those Western reset funds gifted to the collapsing states going to go? The Western banks, not poor villages in some forest in Siberia. However, Estonia has managed to shake free of the grip of the super mafia and formed the world's leading digital direct democracy, which is growing in popularity by the day. So, it could have been done a generation ago, and Putin might never have climbed out of his KGB hole to impose mayhem, and our greedy leaders played their part in his rise and his reaction to their mendacity. He is as contemptuous of them as they claim to be of him. But what about us? The sacrifices our families made earned us the right to gain some control over our destinies, and clowns at the top with a few tricks up their sleeves had best think long and hard now. They may hope to keep their central banking hands firmly on the political and corrupted financial controls of the system, but any doing so will pay a heavy price for their folly. Our old boys and girls did their duty, and now it's our turn to do ours to protect the rights they earned for us. There is not a jot of difference between those in the country clubs and us in terms of political rights. Their duties and their rights are the same as ours. We are free and equal under the law, and it is my duty to step forward and maintain that for me and mine, and for you to do the same for you and yours. If you are not ready for this, get out of the way of those of us who are. After thousands of years of bowing and scraping to religious leaders, dynastic rulers, and more recently representatives, it turns out we didn't quite get there. But now, the curtain has been pulled back, and the show the representatives put on for us has been revealed to be that of a troop of illusionists. Well, the show's over. Thomas Paine, a grammar school boy, battled with the pen to help guide two revolutions to free Americans and Europeans from subservience to crowns, and so that the law was the same for all. I once had a place not too far from where he lived, and I've downed a few in the pub he used before he headed off to America to set the revolutionary tinder alight. His famous pamphlet, Common Sense, is often recognized as providing the spark that set America alight, a simple but telling title, not something we see a lot of these days. This friend of Benjamin Franklin went on to publish several volumes of The Rights of Man, which were a sensational success, selling over 1 million copies. England only had around 6-7 million inhabitants at that time, and was read widely in revolutionary France. This fight for us to rule ourselves has been a long one, but only partially successful. However, the current crisis is our opportunity, the time for us to drive home the argument that the system is not there to serve its ancient masters, but to serve all of us equally. That's our right and our duty. This book is not an attack on a class. It is an attack on special privileges gifted by those in a position to do illegitimate favors for themselves and others. I am the son of a sergeant, and I served with the sons of generals. The system took me in and trained me alongside them and sent me out on operations with them. The best officer I served with was one such officer who tragically reached too far once too often. I also went through Sandhurst with a well-spoken fellow who was left a small fortune by an aunt he hardly knew. I met him almost a decade later in the most dangerous patch that we could at that time deploy to, leading his troops, one of whom had his head almost torn off by a sniper round. He could have shot off to the city in a pinstripe suit many years before, but he did what he saw as his duty. And the men and women they led? They come from many places, but the council estates produce lots of the fighters, those on the front line, going through tough selection courses because they love this country too, and believe in it because their families stood up for it in the past. To some extent, we were all fooled, believing in the myths we were told and sold. Not long ago, I saw the results when I met a young lad who was living in a hostel, mind-addled from drugs, and he explained that he had been a young Royal Marines commando, but was now messed up by his experiences in Afghanistan. It's not only life and limb that can be lost, and we lose more veterans to suicide after their service than we do in combat. 19-year-olds from a rough part of town who puke before exiting their bases still head out the gates to face what they must so that they won't let their mates down. A lot is owed to them, and I never forget. Can you see the social science lecturers displaying such courage to defend free speech on their campuses? They only have to face down a baying mob of wet students. However, I don't just think. I believe that those efforts and sacrifices were needed in this imperfect world to carry us towards our goal. None of the sacrifices were in vain, as all of them have helped edge us closer to the hybrid solution, and we are within striking distance now. With my last breath, I will be striving for it, for you and yours, for me and mine, and in doing so, I will die happy. Is it worth it? I think it is. What about you?